You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 team.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join us this week on Thursday, right after the Dodgers-Marlins Day game, to get in on the action. Locked On Dodgers is the daily podcast covering the world champion Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential, along with Vince Semperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends. Vince, the game sucked, but at least it took forever.
Yeah, it was just all bad, all around, over 4 hours, and a loss, and the way they lost, it was just... Yeah, one of those ready to turn the page.
Yeah, you can't even blame the length on the extra innings. They only played 10 innings, and the first 9 innings of the 1-1 tie took, I think, 4 hours and 15 minutes, something like that. So it was just kind of ridiculous and ugly way to lose the game. Defense let the Dodgers down. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about some struggling, one struggling Dodger in particular, whose name rhymes with Shmejay Shmolik. I'm going to talk about Chris Taylor's decision to bunt in the top of the 10th inning. Talk about one bright side of the game, which was Tony Gonsolin. And then we've got a smattering of news stuff to talk about that we will cover at the end. So that's the plan. But first, we want to remind you, please follow or subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, Vince. So let's, I guess let's jump in with AJ Pollock first. This is a kind of a train that you and I have both been on for a while. AJ Pollock against right-handed pitching. And he is now one for his last 15 against right-handed pitchers with 9 strikeouts. It's almost 2019 NLDS level of struggles. And his splits this year, while at first glance, it seems like, oh, he's not that much worse against righties than lefties. Because, you know, it's changed now, but coming into Tuesday's game, he had a 732 OPS against righties, 760 against lefties. You're like, oh, that's not bad. It's not that much of a split. Or you're thinking, oh, he's actually kind of bad against both sides this year. You know, whatever you're thinking, you're not necessarily thinking he's much worse against righties than lefties. But if you dig into it a little bit, batting average is significantly worse, 239 versus 266. On base percentage, 288 versus 338. The only thing that is propping up his OPS against righties is he actually has a higher slugging percentage. 5 of his 8 home runs have come against right-handed pitchers. And that's kind of what AJ Pollock is now. He is, against right-handed pitchers, he is most of the time going to look really bad, and every once in a while he's going to run into a home run, and that's going to keep getting him at bats against righties. But, you know, I like AJ Pollock a lot as a person. I even like him as a player when he's put in the right situations, but I don't need to see him bat against a right-handed pitcher for a while.
Definitely don't need to see that. He had struck out, what, 5 times in a row. It was interesting because yesterday the lefty started. He had his, like, 2 of his, I think, 7 hardest hits. And then after that, they brought in a right-hander and he struck out every time. And then today, same thing. And when he looks bad, he looks bad, and that's how he looks against right-handers most of the time. He salvaged himself a little bit at times, and when he's hot, he does have the ability to hit against right-handed pitching, but usually not. The other part of it is just with so many maneuvering parts and guys taking days off and stuff like that, the Dodgers don't necessarily have, I don't know. It would take a lot of maneuvering for them to try to sit Pollock every day against left or against right-handed pitching. They don't have the luxury of Jock Peterson this year. Maybe if the Cubs keep losing, maybe Jock Peterson becomes available and the Dodgers say, hey, Jock, you want to come back and bat against right-handed pitching? But I'm not sure exactly what the thing is. We'll talk a little bit about Yoshi Tsutsugo at some point in this episode. I don't think he's the answer there, but he is a guy who is hits left-handed, but not necessarily a good hitter.
Yeah, it's, you know, Matt Beatty is right there. You know, Zach McKinstry's right there. I understand Dave Roberts has always been the kind of guy, manager, who is going to give his guys time to try to figure things out. He's never going to manage a game in July like it's October, no matter how much people might want him to. And most of the time, that's a good thing. And so I'm not even necessarily saying Dave Roberts has been wrong for this last little while to keep playing Pollock against righties. What I'm saying is I'm done with it, and I'm ready for Dave Roberts to say, you know what, I've seen enough. Sorry, AJ, you're mostly going to play against lefties now. And, you know, I respect the approach as a player's manager and everything. And like I said, every once in a while, Pollock does run into one, and you might need him off the bench sometimes. And against a right-handed pitcher, you know, last I saw it, it might still be true. AJ Pollock is the only player ever to actually hit StatCast classifies as a barrel off whichever Goofy Rogers it is that pitches for the Giants. Tyler, I think you and I talked yesterday before we started recording about how I don't know the difference between Trevor Taylor and Tyler Rogers. But the one who throws sidearm for the Giants, AJ Pollock, is the only player ever to hit a barrel off him. So it can happen against some righties in some situations. And maybe it's the case of, okay, look at this particular righty's stuff. Does he have the kind of stuff that is likely to make AJ Pollock look like a fool? Okay, let's not play him against those guys. And, you know, the Pablo Lopez has a good slider. And so it seemed like a bad time to try to start AJ Pollock against a righty. And unfortunately, that played out. Doesn't mean that it had to, but it did.
The other part is, you know, on the Matt Beatty front, he hasn't necessarily played himself into a role defensively. We've seen him make a few mistakes this season, and, you know, having him play in the outfield over the course of 9 innings combined with him not hitting at the moment is probably not enough maybe justification for Roberts to use him in that spot. McKinstry is a guy, but like I said, with all the other maneuvering with Seager out and Lex moved over, and then, you know, they're trying to fit in Taylor, and then they're sitting guys to keep them rested. Whatever the case may be, there's just a lot more that Roberts has to do than just having that one guy that they've had in Jock Peterson the last 6 years or so. So it'll be interesting. That might be something they address at the deadline as well. That I'm sure getting a hitter that can hit right-handed pitching is a lot easier than getting some of these other things they may need at the deadline, like pitching.
Chris Bryant can play left field, so he's going to be available. All right, we'll take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Tony Gonsolin being the one on the bright side. We'll talk a little bit about Chris Taylor's decision to bunt in the 10th inning. So keep it locked on, Dodgers. This episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with us, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about the Dodgers or your other favorite teams in sports. We will be hosting rooms for Locked On Dodgers once a week. This week, it's going to be tomorrow, Thursday, right after the Dodgers-Marlins day game. Green Room is the perfect place to start or join conversations about the league. You'll have the chance to chat with us every week, and be sure to join us this week. If you haven't yet, go download the free Spotify Green Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices, and be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the MLB group for the latest league updates. Follow me at Snydog to be notified when our room goes live. We know you won't want to miss it. Like I said, Thursday, tomorrow, right after the Dodgers-Marlins day game, we will be going live on Spotify Green Room, and we can't wait to hear your thoughts on the Dodgers. We'll see you there. Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. Okay, Vince, let's talk a little bit about Tony Gonsolin, kind of the one bright side of this game. And it's kind of funny that a pitcher going 5 innings is a bright side, but when it's Tony Gonsolin, it is. He's still being built up, and, you know, maybe we'll dig a little bit into it. Maybe he should have gone a little bit longer, but he went 5 1/3, got the first out of the 6th inning, and then they pulled him out, brought in a guy whose name we have still never said, but we will right now, Jake Reed, who got called up earlier. We'll talk a little bit more about him later. But Gonsolin went 5 1/3 shutout innings, looked really good for the most part. He walked, I think it was Garrett Cooper on a full count pitch that was probably strike 3, you know, so even the walks he had were tighter than some of the other appearances this year that he's had. And all in all, I think it was promising, and hopefully we can very soon be to the version of Tony Gonsolin who they can just kind of treat like a regular starter and not as a half bullpen game, because with only four starters right now anyway, having three and a half is really hard for any team. And so hopefully we are getting really close to Tony Gonsolin being a guy we can count on to go six or seven innings.
That's what they need. And Joe and Nomar talked about this on the broadcast of, you know, they've been playing it safe with Gonsolin, and then he had the little bit of the shoulder issue that was coming from what he was went down on the IL for, so they even slow played it a little bit more. But he's made enough starts now where he should be fully stretched out already. I know he had a little bit of a setback, but he's at the point where they need to know if he's going to be a guy that can give them six innings almost every time out, and they need to know that, because with Trevor Bauer and, you know, maybe him not pitching the rest of the season, and with Gonsolin, if he can't go five, six innings every single time out, then the need for a starter becomes even greater, not just for the regular season, but also for the postseason. You know, last year they were able to get by with a bunch of bullpen games, but, you know, Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin weren't pitching that well in those games. You felt like they maybe would have preferred to go back to the way it was, where they were making starts and they knew how long they were going, whatever the case was. But yeah, for Gonsolin, this was a good first step. Shutting down the Marlins, going five innings, probably could have went more. But, you know, Dave Roberts probably was erring on the side of caution even more so. They say they might stretch him out to 90 pitches in his next start. So hopefully that means one more start like that. Then after the All-Star break, he's just a full-fledged starter and he can give them the length that they need, because as we talked about a lot of times, they're going to need a lot of innings taken up by not just starting pitchers, but also maybe new starting pitchers. So, and get the bullpen a little bit of rest, especially with all the bullpen games they've thrown in the first half. So there's just a lot that is kind of hinging on Tony Gonsolin, and he's kind of going to be the key to how aggressive the Dodgers are at the deadline for certain positions and pieces.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things that was most promising to me on Tuesday about Gonsolin was the effectiveness, because I don't think it's just been pitch count with him. I think his being built up has actually been hindered a little bit by his effectiveness, because he's had some long innings. And when you throw 30 pitches in an inning, that takes off some of the overall pitches that you're going to be able to throw that day. And so I think that's part of what the issue's been. And so, you know, I don't even know what the actual pitch count ended up at. I think it was in the 70s somewhere. But part of that is because I don't really care, because the big thing was getting through the five innings. That meant that he was actually pitching effectively, pitching efficiently, so that he was able to get the pitch count up. So yeah, if he can get to 90 pitches next time, that's at least six innings, hopefully. And then, like you said, after the All-Star break, full steam ahead with Tony Gonsolin, number five starter, slotting into the rotation right behind Julio and Max Scherzer, I think.
That'll work for me.
So, changing subjects, in the top of the 10th, it's 1-1 game. Will Smith starting the inning on second base, and Chris Taylor bunted. And Alfaro made a nice play coming out from behind the plate, got to the ball quickly and made a strong throw to third, got Will Smith out at third. It seemed to me, and I'm interested to know if you agree with me on this, seemed to me pretty clear that that was Chris Taylor doing that on his own, and not a call from the dugout. It also seemed like Will Smith didn't know it was coming. And because, you know, if you're expecting a sacrifice bunt when you're on second base, you know, okay, I need to get a good jump, go into third, to make sure that I get there safely, et cetera, et cetera. And Smith didn't seem to be aware that a bunt was coming. I don't know. Did you think Taylor did that on his own? And what did you think of the call?
It had to have been on his own, just because in that situation, you know, Chris Taylor knows if the bunt was called from Roberts or the dugout, whoever, I don't think he would have tried to bump for a hit. Chris Taylor can get a better bunt down just if he's bunting straight up. And he, like I said, Smith had zero jump at all. He was thrown out by a long shot. And I'm not sure if Taylor was trying to surprise the defense, whatever the case was. But just, you know, not the best decision. Even if it, whoever's decision it was, not the best decision in general. They, you know, with knowing that Marte was going to start the bottom of the inning on second base with some speed, all it would take was maybe a couple ground balls or a ground ball and a fly ball, and Marte scoring very easily. So they were kind of playing for more than just the one run, even with Blake Treinen on the mound, who should have got out of it if, you know, the defense didn't falter there at the end with Smith and Turner. So I definitely think it was Taylor just trying to catch him off guard and maybe trying to do too much when he's hitting very well right now.
Yeah, for sure. There's no way the manager's going to call a bunt with Chris Taylor, because Chris Taylor is one of those guys who is absolutely capable of at least an RBI single and maybe even more. He's kind of who you want at the plate, or one of the guys you want at the plate in that situation. So, I mean, I love Chris Taylor. I think it was a boneheaded move. I don't know when the last time he successfully bunted for a hit was, but it was long enough ago that I don't remember it. And so I just don't in fact, the only time I can remember him trying to bunt for a hit was his first year with the Dodgers, 2016, when he came up against the D-backs and just needed a single to complete the cycle. And he tried to bunt for a hit then and was unsuccessful that time too. So yeah, swing the bat, Christopher. You're an all-star for a reason. Overall,
also just another quick point of why small ball is better in theory sometimes than it is in practice, because, you know, bunting doesn't equal runs all the time.
Yeah, and we saw it on the other side too. The Marlins had Joe Panik try to bunt in the, was that the 10th or was that the bottom of the 9th?
That was the 10th, yeah.
And Panik was unsuccessful. He ended up striking out. You know, bunting is hard against major league pitching.
Well, maybe the 9th when they had two on.
Yeah, I think it was.
But either way.
But yeah, bunting is hard. It's not always successful. But yeah, overall, it was just kind of a bad game for fundamentals for the Dodgers in, you know, not overall, but in some key ways. You had the error by Gavin Lux that allowed the first run to score, that after the game, the official score changed that to a hit. So congratulations, Jake Reed. The unearned run you allowed is now earned. And I guess Gavin Lux, your fielding percentage is a little bit better, but that ball needs to be played. The next batter, Miguel Rojas, hit a base hit to right field, and Mookie Betts just made a bad throw in that allowed Rojas to get to second. That didn't end up biting them, but they gave Rojas a double, but that's not a double. That's a bad throw from Mookie Betts coming in. You know, and then obviously the play that ended the game, where Smith probably should eat that ball after it's in the dirt. Maybe he should do a better job blocking it in the first place. Definitely shouldn't make the throw of the third. Justin Turner probably needs to lay out a little bit better to block that. Just kind of an overall game four of the 2020 World Series vibes for that play to end the game. And yeah, I mean, it's frustrating anytime your favorite team loses, but losing in ways like that, where it's fundamental baseball that goes wrong, is kind of annoying.
Yeah, obviously I watch more Dodger games than any other game, but I don't know. I don't remember even just watching highlight shows or whatever, or seeing highlights on social media. I feel like the Dodgers have lost some wild ways the last couple of years. They had the Grandal, the drop third strike, and then overthrowing it. They've had, I can't remember anything else off top, but I know this is not the first time I've just thought, like, wow, that was a stupid way to lose a baseball game. And the Dodgers have not mastered it, but it's happened a few times. And in regards to Smith, I don't know. Did you see the Hairston stuff that's going around social media right now?
He's very angry
at the fact that catchers go down to one knee with runners on second and third. There's people praising it, people not praising it. But I feel like Jerry Hairston just knows that niche of him. Anytime he says something that's tech, like throwback, old school baseball-wise, he's going to get the love on social media from not a majority, but at least a loud majority.
Yeah, a portion of the group anyway. Yeah, Jerry Hairston is a third-generation ball player. You know, he's old school in ways that even other old school guys can only dream of being. And he's wrong a lot of the time. You know, the fact is that the game of baseball has changed, and he doesn't think that's true, and he doesn't like that it's true. But yeah, baseball has changed, and even when he was playing, he wasn't a catcher. So I'd be shocked if Hairston is aware of the reasoning behind catchers going to one knee. And I feel like you need to be aware of what you're criticizing and the reasons behind it if you're going to be have actually valid criticism. And the only reason I suspect that is because I've seen Jerry Hairston, you know, he's always ranting about launch angle. But he doesn't understand launch angle. And anybody who understands launch angle can listen to Jerry talk for 30 seconds and say, oh, wow, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about in this case. And yet it's one of the things he's most vocal about. And I feel like if you're going to be super vocal about something, you should take 10 minutes to learn about it first. That's just me, though. Knowing what you're talking about is something, you know, and I'm not perfect in that way. I'll probably say something later in this episode that shows that I don't understand something, but I promise I won't be as passionate about it as Jerry Hairston is about catchers on one knee and launch angle. All right, so we're going to come back in just a minute. We're going to talk about just some overall news. I've got at least five names on my list that we're going to talk about, all of whom, you know, we may never mention again on this podcast, but we probably will. But so, Dodger news coming up, so keep it locked on Dodgers. Built Bar, as you know, is the best tasting protein bar ever, and it's even better now because they have, for a limited time, a new flavor, the Grasshopper Cookie Built Bar. It's a limited time, delicious. I had one last week. It's like a Thin Mint that you buy from the Girl Scouts, except it doesn't make you feel like a big fat loser for eating it because it's healthy too. It's only available this week, July 6th through 9th. You can get this Built Bar flavor, Grasshopper Cookie. It has 150 calories, 17 grams of protein, only 5 grams of sugar. That's like half of a Thin Mint. And as you all know, when you eat Thin Mints, you eat the whole sleeve. Well, the whole sleeve of Thin Mints is like a zillion times more sugar than a Grasshopper Cookie Built Bar. I also know from experience, you can throw it in the freezer like you do with your Grasshopper or your Thin Mints and pull it out of the freezer nice and cold, eat it that way. Oh, so good. They also have other flavors. If you don't want the Grasshopper, I don't know why you wouldn't, but they've got probably 10 other flavors. All of them are in that same range on protein and calories and sugar and carbs. They're just healthy in every way you can imagine. So whether you're trying to lose weight or build muscle or just have a snack that tastes good and doesn't make you feel guilty, Built Bar is the way to do it. It's also the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. That is cool. And if you go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. All right, Vince, back for one last segment. And today we are going to be talking about a little bit of news. After the game on Tuesday, Dave Roberts mentioned that they will make some roster moves. He specifically mentioned Mitch White, who he hasn't pitched since, what was it, July 1st?
Yeah, July 1st, 3 innings.
Yeah, so 3 innings on July 1st, hasn't pitched since then in the minors, so he should be ready to go at least 3 innings if that's what they need from him. And it sounds like they might, because Roberts said several guys will be unavailable for the bullpen game. Not your ideal situation coming into a bullpen game, which goes back to why some people thought that maybe Gonsolin should have been used for 6 innings to save an arm. But Jake Reed, I expect, will be at least one of the corresponding moves going back to the minors. He was called up before the game, made his major league debut in this game, allowed the first run to make room for Jake Reed on the 40-man roster. Steven Souza was DFA'd, which I think we've all seen coming. Let's talk about Souza for just a minute, then we'll get into these pitchers. Souza is most likely going to clear waivers because there's not much about a 32-year-old corner outfielder with a 600 OPS that says, hey, we need you on our roster. So I expect he's going to clear waivers. The question is, will he then accept an outright assignment back to AAA? Or do you think, I just, on Monday night, I saw Steven Souza walking back to the dugout at one point, and I thought, that looks like a guy who might be ready for retirement.
It's very possible. The weird part, at least, or I saw it, not I would saw a couple of tweets about it, and then on my Ravine Fiends Instagram page, Steven Souza was getting defended like he was OPSing like 900, not 600. I understand he has an interesting story, and he had that one game against the D-backs, but I don't think people realize he hasn't done much since then. So I'm not sure why people were defending him or very upset that the Dodgers DFA'd him. But regardless, you know, I could think maybe he sticks it out the rest of the year. The way things go with the Dodgers, he might find his way back up in the majors at some point this season. And, you know, maybe thinking longer term. I mean, I guess he could get a ring at this point if they would go on to win it. But, you know, maybe being a part of it. But yeah, his options will be very limited. Nobody's going to pick him up right now. He'll probably clear waivers. You know, do you really want to go play in OKC through July and August in the summer? Or do you want to maybe be home and spend time with your family and just call it a time? I don't know what his deal is going to be. But I wish him well either way.
Yeah, for sure. And he is a feel good story just getting back to the big leagues. And it's fun that he did have that one big moment for the Dodgers. Most people don't get one and exactly one big moment with the Dodgers. So that was nice and clean that he just had the one. He did hit really well in AAA this year. So, you know, there might be part of him that does want to go back to there where he can build up his value. And whether it's coming back to the Dodgers or, you know, getting an opportunity with another team, you know, he might, but he's made about $10 million in his career. And so I wouldn't be shocked if he is in a situation where he says, you know what, I'm ready to do the next thing. But I don't know. So he was DFA'd. So he's off the active roster and the 40-man roster, possibly leaving the organization. Another guy who has 40-man roster implications is Yoshi Setsugo. He, on Tuesday, was the 20th day of his rehab assignment after being on the injured list. And that means that the Dodgers now have to do something with him. I wasn't sure, but I looked it up and I'm pretty sure now that he does have options available. I wasn't sure if there were different rules for players who come from foreign leagues, but as far as I can tell, the only exception to the options rule is somebody with 5 years of major league service. So service in a foreign league doesn't count towards that. So as far as I know, Setsugo has three options available. So the Dodgers could just say, okay, your rehab assignment is over, and now you are just a minor leaguer. You're just in AAA now. That doesn't help with the 40-man roster, and the Dodgers might need a 40-man spot soon for one or two reasons. But Setsugo has been bad in the minors in his rehab assignment. I don't know if there's any reason to keep him around. I don't know if there's hope for him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the plan is. I don't see him, if he's not hitting well in the minors where everyone hits well, Luke really goes down there and rakes. That's an issue. I know he's had a couple home runs and some other hits, but the Dodgers probably don't have use for him. They tried to get him in here. They thought they could fix him. They had a couple ideas of with this swing, but it might just be a matter of, you know, it's a time crunch. They didn't have the time to do so. They are in a pennant or a divisional race more so than they may have thought this time. So they can't really afford to be giving out at-bats to guys that don't belong in the major leagues at this time. So could be a matter of them, you know, optioning him and maybe, or even just asking him like, hey, do you want us to option here? Do you want us to DFA you? Do you want to try to go somewhere else? They have enough depth down there in the minors to withstand him leaving if need be, and maybe he can catch on with somebody else.
And for that matter, with the DFA, the way the Dodgers got him was by claiming him from the Rays. If the Dodgers were to DFA him, it's not super likely that anybody claims him either, and he doesn't have the service time to reject an outright assignment either. So they could DFA him to get him off the 40-man roster and still keep him in AAA if they needed to. And they might need to, because you came across a tweet from his name's Francis Romero, right? Who isn't verified on Twitter, but he does have connections with Cuban ball players. I remember last year, I think during the lockdown, he had some, although didn't he end up being wrong? Was he the one who said that Puig was going to sign with the Giants?
Think so.
So, you know, he has some connections with Cuban ball players, but tough to know exactly what those are and where his information is coming from. But he says if the Dodgers are calling up Darian Nunez, a guy who you and I both had to immediately go look up, because I've heard the name, but he hasn't been on my radar at all. He's been in the Dodgers organization since 2017, maybe. 16 or 17, and he's been playing in the United States with the Dodgers minors since 2018, but this year in Oklahoma City, he's pitched 15 games, 29 innings, all in relief, and so he's like a multi-inning reliever, and he has a whip of 1 and 39 strikeouts in 29 innings. Most of that whip is his 15 walks. He's only allowed 14 hits in 29 innings, and so and a 2.79 ERA. And Oklahoma City is not an easy place for a pitcher to put up good numbers. So, you know, while he wasn't on our roster, if this is accurate, it seems like It might be a short-term thing just to get through this crunch right now, but he might be a guy who could contribute. But if that's the case, they will need that 40-man roster spot either from Setsugo or Donnie Wall, who left on Tuesday with injury. Seems like it might be severe, so he might be up for a DFA or a longer-term injured list stint that would clear up that 40-man roster spot.
Yeah, if it's true, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what he can do. Clearly, Dave Roberts is not afraid to go to guys just coming up. He went to Jake Reed in, depending how you feel about it, he went to Jake Reed in a 1-0 game. It was a sixth inning, and he knew that they had to get some innings because they had a bullpen game coming up. So, you know, it wasn't just necessarily, oh, let's throw him in the fire, see what happens. It was kind of out of more of necessity. But either way, you know, Mitch White, Darren Nunez, if they both do come up, they're going to have to eat some innings on Wednesday and, you know, really get the Dodgers back on track for the rest of this way up until the All-Star break in order to, you know, kind of salvage their arm. So, regardless of who it is or what it is, you know, the Dodgers just need guys that can come in and get out, and they need their offense to score more than one run.
Absolutely. And, you know, for all the stuff about Roberts' decisions and the pitching and stuff, in a game when you allow zero legitimate earned runs in 10 innings and only score one run, pitching is pretty far down the list of reasons why the Dodgers lost that game. They lost because they didn't execute when they needed to, left too many guys on base, and had some fundamental defensive issues. But looking ahead to today's game, it is a bullpen game for both teams. And so, you know, that will hopefully benefit the Dodgers because the Marlins had to use their good relievers all on Tuesday. But the Dodgers need to get some innings from some relievers. And so it'll be an interesting bullpen game, even less enjoyable than some of them, maybe.
Yeah, as long as they keep it under 4 hours or get a win, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, one or the other, ideally both. So,
yeah.
You have any final thoughts before we wrap it up, Vince?
The series is exhausting so far, but hopefully the Dodgers can win the next two and just leave Miami with a split.
Yep. As we are recording this, the Padres are up on the Nationals 7-4 in the eighth inning, and the Giants are losing to the Cardinals 6-5, but it's the bottom of the ninth, and the Giants have first and third and one out in the middle of a pitching change. So now if anybody want to do any forensic CSI-ing, you'll know exactly what time it was when we recorded this, or I'll tell you it's 10:09 Pacific PM on July 6th. There, I just did the CSI for you. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. We were back on top last week, number one most listened to show on the Locked On Podcast Network's MLB shows. So thank you for getting us back there. If you're not listening every day, we know listening to a show every day, that might be a lot to ask, but if you could add twice a month, you know, add one more episode every other week, that would be awesome. If you have friends or family who are Dodger fans who you think might like this show, tell them to check us out. Anything you can do to help us, we appreciate. And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com, and our phone number for voicemails or texts is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in the car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.
Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts.
Say D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all hard. All heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles.
Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Bye!